I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even in commentary. Nobody can touch me.
That ever lived into your Wrestling Messiah here with a brand new episode of CM2's Wrestling Reviews. This is episode 88, and later on tonight, it is WrestleMania 34, but I have one more review to drop to you before we get to that, and that is a review of, since last time out, we covered when WWE, aka then WWF, invaded the Sky Dome in Toronto for WrestleMania 6. I thought it only elegant to come back and review the next time WWE came to Toronto, WrestleMania 18, which of course featured the epic icon versus icon match of The Rock versus Hollywood Hogan. That and more on this special WrestleMania Sunday episode of CM2's Wrestling Reviews. Like I said, this is episode 88, and we have so much to cover. Little behind the scenes here. I'm recording this at 2 in the morning, where it's officially Sunday, WrestleMania Sunday, because I kind of kept having to push recording back. So, yeah, I have seen NXT TakeOver New Orleans. There's a reason I'm in a happy mood. Can you tell I'm in a happy mood? But we'll get to NXT TakeOver New Orleans later this week. I really want to talk about it, but I gotta calm down, because I'm not gonna be calm. I'm gonna be crying when I talk about this TakeOver. And that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. Little WrestleMania 18 shout out, because that was DDP's thing. But we do have to talk about, so I do want to give my WrestleMania 34 predictions. But first, you know, I made mention last episode, I was in the process of getting through New Japan Pro Wrestling Sakura Genesis, which happened last weekend. Which had a whole bunch of stuff in it that also set up for Ring of Honor Supercard, which also happened this past night. As I said, good luck, gentlemen. You're not beating TakeOver New Orleans. Pack it in, folks. That's it. I have Kevin Sullivan in my mind right now from the Mick Foley episode of the Monday Night Wars, when they were talking about the 1998 King of the Ring Hell in a Cell match, and they went like Kevin Owens, like, pack it in, boys, that's it, it's over, we had a good run, you're not topping that. Actually, I think that's a combination of both Kevin Sullivan and, oh God, I'm blanking on his name. He's in the Hall of Fame now, too. The Living Legend, Larry Zbysko, who is also in the latest WWE 2K17 game. Or 18. Anyways, but yeah, Sakura Genesis happened, so much stuff with it. So I just, like I did with New Japan Strong Style Evolved, just want to give a couple of quick notes. I promise it will be short. And unlike the Hall of Fame inductees at the WWE Hall of Fame last Friday night, it will be short. Oh my God. I think we can all agree that, as much as it pains us, the WWE Hall of Fame was the worst show of the weekend. And I'm laughing about it because I'm of the belief that they should be allowed to say what they want to say. Some were fine. Dudley Boys, they had a lot to say, and they made it funny. I love Hillbilly Jim. I was clutching my Hillbilly Jim doll as he was being inducted, which I still have. That same action figure that Jimmy Hart had brought out. I have that action figure with me. I'm looking at it right now. And I was holding it as Hillbilly Jim. Yes, at 34 years old, I was holding it as Hillbilly Jim was being inducted. And, he just on. And on, and on, and on. And he said he was going to be short. Same for Goldberg. But I digress. I mean, I can forgive that. It's like the 5 hours. I'm like, it's WrestleMania Sunday, right? WWE is going to have to figure something out with that. But again, not what I want to talk about. What I do want to talk about is New Japan Pro Wrestling's Sakura Genesis. I actually do not have the card in front of me. And that's for the most part because the first couple matches were pretty standard opening New Japan matches. You had matches that were setting up titles, like I believe it was Tanahashi, Juice Robinson, and David Finlay. Facing off against Chaos, including Jay White. Of course, setting up the Finlay Jay White stuff and the Juice Robinson Goto stuff. And you things like that. Of those, though, probably the most exciting was the Los Ingobernables de Japón versus Suzuki Gun, which of course involved Naito and Minoru Suzuki, and of course setting up basically Suzuki wanting to challenge Naito, wanting him to wrestle him, and Naito accepting only if he puts the title, the Intercontinental title, on the line. And you know, after that match, that was very fun to watch. I really think we can all agree that the big thing of Sakura Genesis, though, was the final three matches. Dare I say even final four. IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Title match was fun. I enjoyed it. Though I don't really see the direction they have with the titles, and that's the thing. I guess Suzuki Gun will be a good heel team to hold the belts with Konobu and El Desperado. But I was really, really looking forward to Hiromu and Bushi winning the title. I was really looking forward to that. And like, they had a great entrance. Funniest moment in that match definitely was when Hiromu chased Rocky Romero. And I will never forget Don Callis's comment of, like, you know, about hoping that Rocky Romero can qualify for the Olympics because I never seen a man run that fast. And then, of course, Rocky Romero comes later after the match. It's like, oh, look who's here. And I'm telling him, like, I never seen a man run that fast. So that was enjoyable. But then you had, let's be honest, match of the night. Match of the goddamn night was Will Ospreay versus Marty Skrull. And, of course, all the great things, the fact that they talked about the fact, like, you know, there are three things that are constant in the world. Death, taxes, and Marty Skrull beats Will Ospreay. And that being sort of the storyline of Will Ospreay exercising his demons. And mind you, you had Kushida calling the match on the New Japan side, watching the match. And so, beating Liger, earlier, and this was a demon he had to beat. And just this match, it just it went 30 minutes, 30 plus minutes, and it was just amazing. It captivated you. Ospreay and Skrull have such beautiful chemistry. It's literally, they can fight forever. And, like, again, mind you, I had heard that he had taken this big bump, Will Ospreay, and I thought I had saw it, like, earlier. But then when that, I don't want to call it botched, because it wasn't completely botched, but, you know, they didn't hit it right. That Spanish fly off the apron meant to go to the floor. Thank God Will Ospreay is alive. Like, that was wicked. And the fact that they went on with it. You know, in WWE, they probably would have stopped the match. And I would not blame them. Like, safety first. You know, and I'm of two minds of that. One, I am incredibly amazed by the power of the human spirit of Will Ospreay to finish that match. And in that way, you know, God bless him. But they probably should have stopped the match. Like, you know, that stuff, you know, we can't play around with it anymore. You know, and again, it's their discretion, and, you know, I know that they take great care of their wrestlers, as WWE does. But I think, you know, again, if this was happening in WWE, WWE would stop the match, and rightfully so. Safety of performers are imperative. But in this case, it's New Japan, and they did let it go, and that whole build-up, like, oh my God, how can he continue? The blood coming down his face was just an amazing sight. And again, I'm torn on this because it's amazing. And it's, as wrestling fans, it's what we love. And we love that spirit to continue. Even in injury, we drive for it. But at the same time, I didn't want to see Will Ospreay further injure himself. And it goes back and forth, because that in turn goes back to, you know, making him feel like he's in danger. Not, you don't care whether he loses the title, but you feel like if he continues the match, in danger. But you're amazed by his spirit, and so, you know, going back and forth in that. I mean, you just add that to what was an amazing match leading to all that stuff, and then that amazing ending. With the Ozcutter basically out of nowhere. Absolutely terrific match. Match of the night. I dare say, match of the year candidate. Amazing match. And there was no way the others were going to follow that. Not Kenny. Not Kazuchika Okada. Not Zack Sabre Jr. Not Cody. Not Ibushi. And those matches were good. You know, I very much enjoyed the Paige and Cody versus Golden Lovers match. A lot of things there. A lot of story building, like with the Young Bucks coming out and, like, you know, telling Cody basically to stop. You know, and of course, you add that for those who've been watching Being the Elite, you know all the storylines going into that. And that was a great back and forth match, a great tag match. Shocked that Cody and Paige won, especially sort of knowing some of the results already tonight of Supercard, but that's here nor there. But it was a good match, and then, you know what, Kazuchika Okada versus Zack Sabre Jr., I very much enjoyed it, but that's because, again, I'm a guy that can sit there and watch a complete ground wrestling match in a professional wrestling ring. You know, I remember loving it when I saw Kurt Angle versus Chris Benoit would do it all the time. And there's so many, like, I'm looking forward to hopefully seeing Daniel Bryan and Chad Gable do this. But yeah, I very much enjoyed it. Like, Zack Sabre Jr. is just a joy to watch. How he just flows from hole to hole, and it just makes it something so different to watch. I actually had to watch, though, this match twice. Because, full disclosure, I decided to watch it after eating dinner, and I was laying down, and I kind of fell asleep for, like, that middle part of this match. So I had to watch it again. And maybe that should tell me that maybe it's not as exciting as I say it is. Because there are lulls in this match. And it hurts me because, like I said, I don't want this to seem like the style is boring. But I think if you're watching it at the wrong time, yeah, it can lull you to sleep a little bit. Because it's very slow. It's very build intensive. And it doesn't have sort of that exciting, like, just, like, wakes you up. And so, like, it's not so much sleeping as much as I found myself dozing off. And I had to wake myself up. So I did have to rewatch it. But, like, mind you, it was a match I probably would have rewatched anyways. Because I thought it was a good match. Though I think the dozing does point to a problem because it wasn't Zack Sabre Jr., it was Kazuchika Okada. And again, I've said this before about Kazuchika Okada. I know a lot of people love him and he got Wrestler of the Year, but there is something to where, like, he has this charisma that he sometimes loses, and I don't know if that makes sense. But, like, he'll bring it out during the final sequence, and that's great, but you're like, okay, where was this the first half of the match? And I understand building and building, but it's like, it can sometimes lull you into dozing off. But still, it was a good match. Very much enjoyed it. I also, again, maybe that had to do with watching it, again, the first time I watched it, after the Ospreay Skull match. Which, again, there is no touching that match. That was match of the night. So, overall, I give Sakura Genesis 3 out of 5. Solid show. Match of the year candidate. And some good matches. But I also think that outside of maybe the special tag match between the Golden Lovers and Cody and Paige, and the Marty Skrull, Will Ospreay match for the junior heavyweight title. And, of course, the final match. Not much. Most of the stuff actually happens after the matches. But still a solid show. Very much enjoyed watching it. Where are we? Ooh. I've been talking long like Hillbilly Jim. So I think it's time, before we get into the review, to go over my WrestleMania 34 predictions, because, of course, tonight, as of this recording, that is, WrestleMania 34 is going to happen. So let's start with pre-show stuff. I'll do both Battle Royals first. For the Women's Battle Royal, I think that's a very hard choice. I'm going to say I think it's going to be somebody from NXT, because obviously there are going to be some NXT wrestlers in this. I believe there is. And, yeah. I think it's going to be somebody from NXT or some surprise. I don't think it's going to be anybody that's currently on the main roster. Because there are certainly some women that are going to be coming up from the main roster to make a debut on the WrestleMania, the Raw after WrestleMania. Ember Moon! Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say that out loud? So, yeah. And then the Andre the Giant battle, Memorial Battle Royal. It's such a hard choice. You always wonder, like, I don't think anybody saw Mojo Rawley winning it until they started making a big deal during the pre-show of Patriot, what's his name, being there. Tadowski, Broski, whatever the hell his name is. All we know is that if he didn't hinder gender, maybe the Patriots would be a Super Bowl champion. But no, it's the Philly Eagles. Fly, Eagle, fly, Cowboy fans. Fly, Eagles, fly. I know a lot of Cowboys fans, and I know that eats them up this year. And it makes my heart happy. So, yeah, it's hard. Who in this match really need? Well, need is a big word. I don't know. Maybe Dolph Ziggler's gonna. I think maybe Dolph Ziggler will be my pick. It's. I haven't looked at the list of. Actually, you know what? I do know who I want to win it. I want it to be Woken Matt Hardy. Because I think everybody can agree with me. Woken Matt Hardy. Talking to Andre the Giant on the top of the trophy is gold. So Woken Matt Hardy, that would be my pick. And then we get to the pre-show match that everybody should care about and everybody should be watching the pre-show for. We have the finals of the Cruiserweight tournament. We have Mustafa Ali versus Cedric Alexander. This is going to be an amazing match. This might be one of those steal-the-show matches. Very much looking forward to it. As great as Mustafa Ali's story is and would be if he got the title, and by the way, wouldn't be mad if he did, you know, I think they've built too much with Cedric Alexander's story about him constantly coming close, and then, like, all the stuff that happened over the past couple months involving Enzo and the title and everything and just everything he's had to go through. They're not going to put the title, they're not going to put the title on him. So, my pick, Cedric Alexander, in an amazing match that's going to blow the roof off the Superdome. Going to the main show, and mind you, these aren't in any particular order. I don't know what the order is, but, like, I'm going to put, like, the heavyweight title matches later in this prediction. I'll start with tag matches. The triple threat tag match from SmackDown. Usos versus New Day versus the Bludgeon Brothers. Barn Burner. I think Bludgeon Brothers come out on top. I think, you know, Usos finally get their WrestleMania match, but they've held the title for so long, and they built up the Bludgeon Brothers so much, and yeah, I think it needs to be put on somebody different. So I'm going with Bludgeon Brothers on this one. I think that will definitely be a shocker, surprise. Speaking of surprises, and by the way, I think that's going to be a great match. There's been some rumors that it might be a TLC match, so they've never set that up. I think it's going to be a regular triple threat. Either way, it could be an amazing match. Speaking of surprises, the Raw tag team titles, The Bar, Cesaro and Sheamus versus Braun Strowman and his surprise partner. I honestly don't know who their surprise partner is going to be. I can't even guess. But I'm still going to say Braun Strowman wins. Especially if his tag partner is his brother, Brain. I mean, all I know is that there's one thing that's for certain, and that is that somebody is going to get these hands. So, yeah, I'm very much going to enjoy it. Braun Strowman and his partner wins, whoever that may be. And I'm sure we're going to be amazingly surprised by whoever it is. Moving on to the WWE United States title match, we have a fatal four-way between Rusev versus Jinder Mahal versus Bobby Roode versus Randy Orton. I think it's going to be a solid match. It's just not going to be everybody's cup of tea. You know, like I said, I enjoyed the Roode versus Orton match, but I can admit that it didn't have the intensity and sort of the speed that the other matches. This is definitely about more sort of technical guys wrestling, but I think the crowd is going to be completely into it for Rusev, and that is going to be amazing. Like, especially if we get the tank. If we get the tank, woo boy, is that crowd going to pop off. Here's another surprise. I pick Rusev. I know it's a strange. I know he's probably there just to eat the pin from whoever it may be. But I got to go with my heart. I want Rusev. I hope Rusev. I want to celebrate Rusev Mania on Rusev Day with a champion, United States Championship win. So my pick is Rusev. And yes, it's a fanboy pick, but God, I hope I'm right. I think this is going to be the Zack Ryder moment of this main. Just like, you know, in 32, where Zack Ryder, who surprisingly had to replace somebody in the Intercontinental match, won it. I'm hoping the same for Rusev without the losing it the next SmackDown. And then we have the Intercontinental Championship match, Triple Threat. The Miz versus Seth Rollins versus Finn Balor, who may or may not come out as the Demon. I talked about before how every match is going to blow off. Every match sounds amazing on this card. But I think it's going to be a really good match. I can't wait to see it. I think Finn Balor. Building for something with Finn Balor, and I think he's going to be the one to win it. Especially since, you know, there have been a lot of rumors of maybe Seth Rollins moving over to SmackDown. Finn Balor, my pick to win that match. Moving on to the women's championship matches. First, we have Nia Jax challenging Alexa Bliss for the title, for the Raw women's title. And based on the storyline they're doing and how much they've pretty much built this up over a year, or pretty much ever since Alexa Bliss came over to Raw. So for almost a year. Nia Jax is winning this. Yeah, she's going to get her hands on Alexa Bliss, and Bliss is going to regret all those remarks she's ever said. Take her anger out. I'm going with Nia Jax to win the title here. So far, I've been calling a lot of title changes here. But I think there's going to be a lot of them. Definitely. Because there's a lot of longtime champions. I will say this. I'm not as sure about the SmackDown tag titles changing hands. But I think that might be a good choice of the Bludgeon Brothers. And the same can be said for the U.S. title. But the women's title, I'm more sure of. Then you have, my God, probably what may be one of the best women's matches of all time. Charlotte Flair versus Asuka for the SmackDown Women's Championship. If this is where they end the streak, you know what? It's a great place to end it. I think it's the right woman to end it. I mean, mind you, I wanted to be Sasha Banks because I thought there was a great story, especially if Sasha came in as champion and she had to defend her belt. But at the same time, Asuka winning and remaining undefeated and just continuing, and then who's going to beat Asuka? You know, you can build such a great story. And the thing is, I don't think anybody's ready for the Empress of tomorrow. So I'm picking Asuka to beat Charlotte Flair at WrestleMania. Now, before we go on to matches that we know are going to happen, allow me to sort of address an elephant in the room and make my prediction of what is in some form going to happen, because there's no way they did 4 weeks of this for nothing. In some capacity, whether officially, unofficially, whether it be just a brawl or whatever, we're going to have Undertaker versus John Cena. And I'm going to predict, yeah, I'm going with my heart on this. Cena comes out on top. He has to. I would love it if it does sort of be an impromptu official match and sort of the retire, you know, again, Cena just does that. To where, you know, and I think if they have a honest to good match, I think it'll be a great match. So it'll be interesting to see, but whatever it is, I think Cena comes out on top. But again, we'll be interested to see what happens exactly. Then we have, let's see, where do we go? Let's go with the other special attraction of, well, the two special attractions. First, we have Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon versus Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. If Sami and Kevin win, they get their job back. I think that tells you that Sami and Kevin are winning, but people are going to be thrilled with this match regardless of what happens. Because, of course, Daniel Bryan's going to be back wrestling. And then you have the other special attraction, Triple H and Stephanie McMahon versus Kurt Angle and Ronda Rousey. A couple things with this match. I think we're all look forward to Triple H fighting Kurt Angle. And we can't wait for Ronda Rousey to get her hands on Stephanie McMahon. And I think when that happens, Stephanie is going to die. So my pick is Kurt Angle and Ronda Rousey. And like I said, I think Kevin and Sammy get their job back, because they're too good not to get their job back. Unless it's one of those things to where they're gone just from SmackDown, and so Raw can pick them up, then I could possibly see Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon winning. Moving on to the final two matches, even though I know it's not going to be the main event, it's the main event to me, damn it, so I'm going to call it last. So, Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar. I really hope it turns out to be Roman Reigns. I know not everybody's excited for this match, but, you know, Roman Reigns, I can put on a good match with Brock Lesnar. I'll enjoy seeing him punch Brock Lesnar's puny little face in, and look forward to him hopefully reviving the Universal title, because at least now it will be defended on a regular basis when he wins it. If Brock, I'll say this, if Brock Lesnar wins, we riot. By typing bad things on the internet. And last but not least, as I said, the one that's a main event to me, damn it, the dream match, the rematch from Wrestle Kingdom 10, Shinsuke Nakamura versus AJ Styles. It is a given that this match is going to be amazing. It's the only thing right now that has a chance of topping Gargano versus Ciampa and any other great match of this weekend. It is going to be an amazing match, and I'm predicting Shinsuke Nakamura wins and becomes the first sort of modern era. Have we had a Japanese wrestler as the WWF champion before? I mean, I have to double check that. I don't think so. I know in Hall of Fame they were talking about Hiro Matsuda, who won the NWA championship, but I don't think there's ever been a Japanese WWE champion. So I think he makes history by becoming the first Japanese-born WWE heavyweight champion, which will be very much impressive and sort of show a very concerted effort to sort of change people's minds and mind WWE, considering how people feel they've treated Japanese wrestlers before. And so the match will be amazing. If Nakamura wins, it will be amazing. I can't wait to look forward to all of the entrances, and that is my prediction for WrestleMania 34. So, whew, that's a lot to go over. And I went through that quicker than I really wanted to, but I went all Hillbilly Jim on the Sakura Genesis review. So, with that being said, I think it's time for us to get into our review proper. So, WrestleMania 18, the tagline, the one and only. The theme songs were Tear Away by Drowning Pool and Superstar by Saliva. It was put on by the World Wrestling Federation. I think the last one to ever have sort of the WWF before it became WWE. I think that happened during this year. It was sponsored by Sour Skittles. It took place on March 17th, 2002, to an attendance of 68,237, which they said during the period was a new Sky Dome record, as it took place at the Sky Dome in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Your color commentators were Jim Ross and Jerry Dickenlawler. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get into WrestleMania 18. Talking about some things with the show, I mean, the stage, by the way, looked amazing. I think a bit smaller version of sort of the 17 stage in a way. And you know, it's really interesting to look at it because you look at 17, 18, and 19, they all had sort of that same stage set up. Just kind of like how 2016 and 15 also, and then 15, I'm trying to think about it, because, so 2000 sort of had the same stage as 16 and 15, and I believe 14 as well, and I'm trying to remember if 13, and I think 13, 14, I can't remember if 12 had a similar stage. I think 11 had a similar stage as well. So they used that sort of stage setup at WrestleMania with the big letters, but that sort of circular entrance thing. But yeah, in these bigger stadiums, they used these much bigger stages. Because, of course, 17 was in Houston, 18 here in the Sky Dome, and then, of course, you had 19 in Seiko Field in Seattle. And then, of course, they would have sort of a different stage for 20 in New York, and then there, the stages were always different, depending on where they were. I don't think the, outside of, I think, 25 and 26, where they had similar stages, and of course, 27, 28, and 29 were also very similar WrestleMania stage, but that's sort of been the new thing as well, is like, stages are always these big, expensive stages and everything, but they have enough different to where they're unique to whatever mania they are. So stage looks great. There were a lot of musical acts with this. Bulf Sliva and Drowning Pool, which were there performing, of course, the two theme songs for the Mania, and also performed at certain wrestlers' entrances, because, of course, and it happened all throughout the pay-per-view, WWE sort of reminding you that there was the new was it WWE Unleashed, or they had this sort of rotten new rock soundtrack to where they had a bunch of wrestlers' themes done by prominent sort of metal bands like Sliva and Drowning Pool. I know Stone Cold's theme was done by Disturbed, because I really love that version of the Stone Cold's theme, actually. So, they were constantly hawking that throughout the pay-per-view. The opening one, where, because the show opened with Sliva doing Superstar, that was great. They did Drowning Pool, I believe, after Edge and Booker T, and right before Stone Cold, and at that point, the crowd was dead and not interested in it, which is very sad. I love Drowning Pool. Tear Away is a great song, and it just, for whatever reason, the crowd wasn't into it. They did have Sliva back to do Get the Tables as the entrance for the Dudley Boys, where they danced with Stacy Keibler, the Dudley Boys headbanged with them. That was awesome. Did a great job with that. And then, of course, you had Drowning Pool doing their version of course, Triple H's newest theme by Motorhead, the game. And I very much like that. Honestly, I thought it was better than when Motorhead played Triple H in the ring at WrestleMania. I believe it was 21. And again, that's not me discouraging Motorhead. WWE has always had sort of an issue with sort of live performances. They've not been always good. Not bad, but just not good. So, there's that. But I very much enjoyed them. I just wish the crowd maybe was a bit more into them. I gotta stretch my legs if I'm gonna continue this, because I can't sit that way anymore. So I just want to get that out of the way, sort of the semantics of that. The first official match, which of course I didn't get to see, because it's a Sunday Night Heat match. Albert, Rikishi, and Scotty Too Hotty defeat the Un-Americans of... Well, no, they weren't the Un-Americans yet. They become the Un-Americans later. But Lance Storm, Test, and Mr. Perfect. A six-man tag team match with Jacqueline as a special guest referee. Yeah, that sounds good. Guys who had it, Rikishi, Albert, the hip-hop hippo, all dancing, I'm sure. We start WrestleMania officially with Rob Van Dam challenging William Regal for the WWF Intercontinental Championship, which went 6 minutes and 19 seconds. This was a very solid opener match. You know, WrestleMania openers need to be really good to get the crowd into it. And, you know, and when you think of really good openers, you think of, you know, Randy Orton versus Seth Rollins at WrestleMania 31. Trying to think of other good openers. And that's really the only one that's sort of coming to mind, actually. Or AJ Styles versus Shane McMahon. Like, great openers that get people really into it. This, I think, is a very underrated one in regards to... It's a really good match. It's great contrast to Styles, William Regal, sort of technical... style, of course, willing to cheat and use the brass knuckles to get an advantage versus Rob Van Dam's educated feet, high-flying style. And so he had the great contrast and a great back and forth between them that I really much enjoyed. I thought there was some great sort of technical work after RVD missed the frog splash the first time. And, Regal's able to sort of put in that sort of heel work to make the comeback that much better And, of course, the surprise kick, thrust kick that allowed VDD to get the 5-star Frog Splash and the height he got on that, which was amazing. And Rob Van Dam and ECW guy getting that huge win on WrestleMania, that was, as a fan, tremendous. Very, very underrated opening WrestleMania match. Very solid match. One of the best matches, actually, I think, of the night. And, of course, your new champion, your new Intercontinental Champion, Rob Van Dam. The whole effing show. Our next match was for the WWF European Championship as the champion Diamond Dallas Page defended against Christian, which took place at, in 6 minutes and 8 seconds. This was another fun little match. Not as good as RVD and William Regal. And as far as this entire card, I think maybe, you know, not one of the best ones. You know, it's really interesting because this entire match had a very good card and very good matches. You know, sitting here and saying it's the worst match, it's not saying how bad it is. It didn't have maybe the same energy or whatnot. Right? It's sort of the same thing we have with NXT, where it's like the worst match on an NXT TakeOver card is like the main event match, 5-star match of the night anywhere else. Not that this is, would be a 5-star match anywhere else. Like, this would be a solid main event on, in fact, a very good main event on, like, Raw or SmackDown. And, you know, it definitely feels like a WrestleMania event. You have DDP coming back for the first time since, you know, being the chauffeur at WrestleMania 6, driving the pink Cadillac for Honky Tonk Man and Rick the Hammer Valentine. And then you, of course, have Christian in his hometown, which he didn't be built from. He would build himself from Tampa, Florida. And again, of course, the storyline going into this of DDP having taken Christian under his wing to try to get him not to throw temper tantrums, to control his emotions, and sort of the fun with that. And sort of that fun storyline. And it was just a fun match. And of course, getting to see Diamond Dallas Page get a win, a WCW guy getting a win on WrestleMania over a WWE guy, was great. And then the whole thing to where Christian started throwing a temper tantrum was like, DDP's like, Christian, you kept your cool. You could have thrown a temper tantrum when I kicked out, but you didn't. And yeah, you lost, but still, that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. And then going out into the crowd and celebrating the crowd. Oh, it was awesome. Very much enjoyed it. Here's where we're going to talk about a couple of matches at once. As the next match officially is Maven versus Goldust for the WWF Hardcore Championship. And a hardcore match. And of course, Goldust had gold-covered weapons. The reason I'm talking about it is like, again, of course, this was during the 24/7 rule, which sort of story I'm going to this is that when Undertaker won the Hardcore Championship, that sort of went away because who's going to goddamn challenge the Undertaker in the middle of nowhere? Are you crazy? But once Maven won it, it started happening again, which, of course, you know, before Undertaker won it, had been with Crash Holly, and, you know, Crash sort of made that rule infamous, and it's so much fun. So, as this match was happening, about by the way, went 3 minutes 17 seconds, that's because Spike Dudley came in, and went a referee's zone, jumped Maven from behind, and pinned him, and then ran off into the crowd, soon to be followed by Goldust and Maven. And then they'd have these vignettes throughout the night. Immediately after this, they had done some setting up for the next match. And they followed Maven. Spike, and Spike's going around, and he comes around, and all of a sudden, the camera turns around, and you see Al Stowe with Teddy Long, who's still refereeing at this point, in a golf court. And they go to ram Spike Dudley, and he jumps out of the way, and they go into these boxes. It's so funny. And I think there was somebody else there that tried something, and Spike Dudley fought him off. And as he's about to leave, went out of nowhere, swinging on a rope, here comes the Hurricane. Kicks him, gets the 1-2-3. Winner. The next vignette as Hurricane tried to hide, and he hides in this room and don't know what's happening. And it's the locker room for the Godfather's hoes. And for whatever reason, Hurricane's holding this stick, this broomstick. And I don't know why, but he was like moving it forward. But it's sort of that Austin Powers thing to where it's behind the screen. So it looks like he's playing with a phallic object, shall we say. The hurricane's getting larger and larger to grossing out the girls who are checking themselves out in the most... That tells you how much size it changed. Like, I can just hear the complaints now, like, girls don't do that to each other. Yeah, we know. That's not the point of the sketch. If that's your focus, you're not focused on the right thing, but that's besides the point. And of course, Godfather comes in, chases Hurricane off, like, girl's alright? Like, not knowing what happened. Next time we see it, Hurricane thinks he's gotten away. I think he meets up with Jonathan Coachman or somebody, and is like, talking about, I'm not a hurt perv. And well, when all of a sudden Mighty Molly comes out of nowhere, it's like, quick, to the Hurricycle. He goes, all right. And then Holly hits him over the head with a frying pan. God damn you, WWE. And pins him, and she becomes champion. Later on, another vignette. She's sneaking through the hall trying to find a way when all of a sudden a door one of those, you know, half doors to where there's a top half that swings and a bottom half that swings, and they're like swing separate of each other. And the top half is swung out of nowhere and hits her in the head, knocking her out. And ducking underneath it ends up being Christian. Pinsir gets the win. And of course, the final one, right before I believe the main event, is Christian, who's like, hail the cab, and he's trying to get out of here. Like, I'm champion. I'm leaving WrestleMania champion. And he's just rolled up by Maven, snuck out of nowhere with a referee who pins him, takes the championship, jumps in his cab, and goes away. And he's hanging out the window. Brandishing the champion. I kept waiting for Maven to just get his head, like, accidentally hit, like, one of those things that are, like, in garages that is, like, accidentally knock himself out. Like, that, like, that would be expected of this. You know, all those vignettes, they were very enjoyable. And they were great ways for the audience, I think, to be entertained as they were setting up for the next match and giving people breaks as well, setting up for, like, performances and everything, and for entrances. So overall, very much enjoyed all the stuff with the hardcore title. With that, moving on to our next official match, Kurt Angle versus Kane, which went 10 minutes 45 seconds. Again, another solid good match. This is sort of Kane in his prime, and then you have Kurt Angle slowly coming up to his prime, looking very good here. Very solid match. I'm glad that it was given, I think, maybe a bit more time. I think it had a solid amount of time. And then I love that sort of they protected Kane by having him be rolled up and cheated with Kurt Angle using the ropes. To get the win. Again, perfect, playing perfectly into Kurt's character. And like I said, protecting Kane. So I really loved about that. Again, just a nice solid match. And it was a good sort of solid lead up into the next match. The Undertaker versus Ric Flair. No disqualification match. And it took place. It took 18 minutes and 47 seconds. With it being actually the longest match of the night, the second longest being 18 minutes 40 seconds, oddly enough. We'll get to that later. I really enjoyed this match. You had Undertaker being the American Badass heel, which, again, just... you saw they really enjoyed that character. And, of course, Ric Flair being Ric Flair gained to prove that he... I don't want to say still got it, because he never loses it, but, like, just... in a really solid match, making his comeback. At least in regards to sort of being the first, like, big... Or sorry, second big match after, you know, WCW closed, that is. I love the storyline involved in this. It made it feel like it was personal Ric Flair, while at the same time knowing that it was an uphill fight. And I love the back and forth here. I love Undertaker's brutality in the match and unrelentingness. But then you had Ric Flair's resourcefulness. Him getting the lead pipe from Taker's motorcycle, beating him to it, and using it to beat the holy hell out of Undertaker. I thought there was some great sort of heelist commentary here as well. Because you had King, talking about, like, how bad it was that, you know, Undertaker had been cut. And he basically had the scratch on his face. Meanwhile, Ric Flair was gushing blood. And just the back and forth between JR and King about that. That I really enjoyed. God, that was very good. And I thought they told a great story, but definitely my favorite moment of the match, and I don't want to seem like it's me dissing on both these wrestlers, but seeing Arn Anderson come out and give just a classic Arn Anderson spinebuster to Undertaker and then roll it away. Oh, God, I love that. And I love how that started setting up the finish. Because before there, Flair had Undertaker in a figure four. Undertaker just sits up and, just beats the holy hell out of him. And just that four horsemen needing the help, that doesn't work. Flair finally goes for a chair. That doesn't work. Can't get Flair up for the last ride, but gives him a tombstone and gets the win. And rides off on his bike. It was just a very solid, very great match. Because of all the storyline tied to it. Then we had Edge versus Booker T, which was a good match. Just as has been talked about with this match plenty of times, they're fighting over shampoo. They brought it up during commentary. If you watch the What Culture Wrestling 10 Facts About WrestleMania, you may have not known, you know about this, that this match was over a storyline involving Edge getting a Japanese shampoo commercial thing and Booker T being jealous of it, which led to him getting an erectile dysfunction pill commercial, Japanese commercial, if I remember right. I think better that, and it was a solid match. It was a good match. Edge versus Booker T went 6 minutes 32 seconds. Like I said, it was a solid match. It was Edge in his hometown. He had the crowd behind him. I think the crowd was a little bit tired from the Flair-Undertaker match. And I think this would affect the next match as well. A little bit. It was a solid match. This would be a great main event. Again, it's like DDP and Christian, it would be a great main event on Raw and SmackDown, but unlike DDP and Christian, this sort of didn't have that fun with it. It just was a solid match. Again, there's nothing bad about it. It was a great win for Edge over a very established superstar, poor Booker T. He doesn't have a good record at WrestleMania, does he? Still a solid match. And so, in a way, nice cool down from sort of the epic confrontation that was Undertaker and Ric Flair. And I know using epic confrontation about that match is probably a bit of an overstatement, but I very much enjoyed it. Moving on to our eighth match tonight is Stone Cold Steve Austin versus Scott Hall, which went 9 minutes 51 seconds. Of course, Scott Hall came down with Kevin Nash. I love the entrances. I think early on this match, again, like I said before, was hurt a little by the crowd not being completely into it because they were still a bit exhausted from the Undertaker-Ric Flair match, but they slowly got into it. And this match definitely, I think, picked up steam as the match went along. And as it built towards the climax, it just got more and more exciting. May not be Stone Cold Steve Austin's best match. And I thought Scott Hall did a great job in this match, honestly. And the selling, like, probably one of the best sellings of a stunner ever, I think, personally. I know a lot of people love sort of the backflip thing, but, yeah, just the, on that, like, third stunner where it, like, just pops up out of the air and everything, just, that's great to see. It's very fun. I thought very solid. So, yeah, very solid, very good match. Again, Stone Cold sort of, I think, you know, not in the best place in this match. There was a lot more brawling in this match, so there's not a lot of tech. And I think that's the thing that's sort of disappointing, though, about the match, is that you have Scott Hall and Steve Austin, who have great psychology in their matches, actually, but because of where they were in their careers, and I mean, we all know the things that were happening, because we know history, it wasn't as psychological. They didn't have sort of the, or should I say, ring psychology as it maybe it could have had, and as us, it didn't have that sort of edge. And I'm like, that's why I think the match is ultimately missing, is that just that little bit of edge that good ring psychology would have brought it. And I think that's what's missing from the match. Next, we have the Four Corners Elimination Match for the WWF Tag Team Championships, as Billy and Chuck, the champions, defended against the APA, Bradshaw and Farouk, the Dudley Boys, Bubba Ray and Devon, with Stacy Keibler, and the Hardy Boys, Jeff and Matt Hardy. This was solid. It went 13 minutes, 50 seconds. Solid. It was great to see the tag teams get a lot of time for this. Unfortunately, you know, this is sitting in the shadow of what Edge, Christian, the Dudleys, and Hardys did. I almost think that maybe what they should have done is, like, split it in two, had the Dudleys versus the Hardys in a grudge match. And then have Billy and Chuck versus the APA, and that may have been better. Because it definitely felt like there was three matches thrown together in one, because you had sort of the opening contest where APA was just running through everybody until they got jumped by the Dudleys in 3D'd and eliminated. You had the Dudleys, for the most part, in control of the Hardys, and them duking it out. And then sort of the third match to where you had Billy and Chuck sneaking in, eliminating the Dudleys, and then trying to get, you know, beat up on Jeff, and or should I say Matt, who gets the hot tag, and Jeff comes in, but gets famouser, and then gets hit with a bell, and, you know, Billy and Chuck cheating to win. There was like three distinct matches in this, and so it felt very disjointed. It still was very enjoyable to watch. It was very enjoyable to see Bradshaw clothesline, give people clotheslines from hell. It was enjoyable to see the Dudleys work, and Dudleys and the Hardys go at it. Maybe if the Hardys won, it would be more memorable, I think. And I think they wanted to go with Billy and Jeff for whatever reason. I think that's, it's the only decision on the card that I second guess, because I think they should have gone with Matt and Jeff Hardy. I think that would have been the better ending, honestly. Of course, you had the draft coming up, which meant that you had a couple of tag teams that were going to be split up, the two in particular being the Dudleys and Matt and Jeff. But, with that, let's move on to the match I've been waiting to talk about for a long time. The next match is The Rock versus Hollywood Hulk Hogan. It went 16 minutes, 23 seconds. without a doubt, match of the night. All the other matches, the crowd was either into it and was there, like it was for Flair and Taker and sort of a couple opening matches, and Kurt Angle and Kane, or they were sort of burnt out a little, like Edge and Booker T at the beginning, Austin and Hall, and for bits of the tag match. But like here, there was nothing like what the crowd was for this match. The crowd, oh my god, you would have thought this was the main event of the night. And certainly, unfortunately, for the last two matches that we'll talk about after this, it might as well have been. Like, oh my god, the electricity coming off this crowd for this match was amazing. And, you know, it was a really good match. You know, I have issues sometimes with Rock matches, how light, I should say, his moveset is. And I guess the same could be said for Hogan, but you know, I'll be damned if these two didn't have great psychology in the match. There was sort of this great story, and like King said it at the beginning, like, the older lion trying to protect his spot from the newer lion, who wants to take over the pride. And so you had that, and then you had a redemption story in there where Hogan coming in as a bad guy in the match, turning face basically by the end. Because he didn't do anything too dastardly, and then at the end shakes The Rock's hands, which gets the NWO angry at the end of the match, who then attack him, and then him and Rock fight them off. And just, oh, it was great, and just it built and built, and, you know, Hogan would throw every hammer up, and then Rock would come back and battle back and, like, top him and get the upper hand. And Hogan constantly having to switch tactics, and then, which would throw Rock for a loop until Rock got his head together and came back. There's actually great psychology in this match, and I don't think people would realize that, being that there are a lot of people that want to do nothing but, you know, smart marks that want to do nothing but complain about Hogan. This was absolutely amazing, and obviously, moment of the match, moment of the night, was when Rock Bottom, Hogan kicks out, Hogan starts hulking up. And I swear to God, I've heard many amazing pops. That this pop is right in that top five of my greatest pops all time. It's right there with Hardy's returning last year. It's, oh, I'm trying to think. It other great ones that I can think of. John Cena returning at the Royal Rumble. Just the absolute most amazing. Eddie Guerrero winning the title at No Way Out. Just up there with some of the most amazing fan pops of the crowd you will ever hear. Like, it's like 10 decibels higher. Had to turn down the TV a little bit, not to disturb people who were in the house, because it was so big. And it's such a great moment. And it's the last Hogan where he's hulking up, does all things, hits a leg drop, Rock kicks out, goes for another, misses, gets Rock Bottom, another Rock Bottom, people's elbow. And again, here, way of protecting Hogan by having Rock having to do two Rock Bottoms in a people's elbow just to pin him. I don't think people realize that, and just the way that made Hogan look like, yeah, one Rock Bottom wouldn't have pinned him. He would have kicked out. Two Rock Bottoms would have kicked out. Had to hit two and the people's elbow. It was an amazing match. What happened after it's amazing. And sort of that redemption story for Hogan, which started, and just sort of, I thought, which was a very good year for Hulk Hogan in the WWE. Which would go all the way through, I think, till, like, through the next WrestleMania, and then, of course, the Mr. America gimmick, which was fun, but you know, that's for another day. So, yeah, it showed that Hogan still had it. Just, it was an amazing match. Match of the night. As I said, though, before, unfortunately, it sort of killed the crowd. Because the crowd was exhausted after this, which was sad. Because the next match was a really good match. And it had a hometown hero in Trish Stratus. As Jazz defended against Lita and Trish Stratus in a triple threat match for WWF Women's Championship. It went 6 minutes, 16 seconds. And like I said, it was a very fast-paced match. Very hard-hitting. There were a couple botches. But nothing too horrendous. And a lot of energy came from them. I think if the crowd had more energy and wasn't like, again, if Rock and Hogan had sucked all the energy from them. And again, I'm not saying that as a bad thing against the Hogan and Rock, because it's not. It's just the unfortunate thing when you have a WrestleMania moment like that match was. The crowd really had no energy left. And I think if the crowd did, this match might be more remembered because it was a really, really good match. And, you know, Jazz hitting the Fisherman Buster, I believe it was a Fisherman Buster off the top rope on Lita to get the win. Great finish to the match after knocking Trish down. Of course, Trish's entrance, by the way, where she's, like, dressed in Canadian gear. Great entrance. I think it definitely, unfortunately, this definitely did not benefit from a crowd being almost dead from energy. And, you know, that continued, unfortunately, again, like we said, sort of same thing happened with Stone Cold Scott Hall, where the crowd was sort of dead from Taker Flair at the beginning. Same thing would happen in the next match. Triple H versus Chris Jericho, the main event, for the Undisputed WWF Championship. Of course, Jericho with Stephanie McMahon. And this was another very solid match. Psychology involving Jericho targeting Triple H's repaired leg, which is supposedly hanging on by a string. The storyline involving him, Triple H, and Stephanie McMahon, and him looking for comeuppance, and, you know, when he finally gets Stephanie, is able to give her the pedigree. That was a big moment in the match. But there was great psychology and great back and forth between Jericho and Triple H. The countering of the pedigree by Jericho and backdropping Triple H onto the Spanish announce table, that was a great spot. But I very much love the finish to where Triple H going for pedigree, attempted counter into the wall to Jericho. Triple H encounters that and is able to counter a kick and counters Jericho with a slingshot onto the turnbuckle. And Jericho's a second too long, goes for a crossbody, but Triple H gets up immediately, kicks him in the gut as he's coming down, gives him the pedigree for the 1-2-3. It was a great sequence of events that led to the win for Triple H. And I thought it was a very solid match with very good ring psychology. It's just missing that edge, and there's a couple things to it. One, like I said, the crowd was a bit dead still. Unlike Austin and Hall, it came back a little, but it wasn't as much as it needed to be. And there was just sort of this sometimes dead air during the match, as far as crowd noise. Not that the crowd was ever completely silent, but, there wasn't that electricity there. And there was also, I think, one too many storylines concerned. I think if they did not have the Stephanie Triple H sort of storyline going in there and just allowed Jericho to be this dastardly heel, great wrestler, I think maybe people would have been a bit more into it. I think too many storylines in the pot hurt it a bit. You combine that with just, again, like I said, the the amazing match that Rock versus Hollywood Hulk Hogan was. By the way, the match went 18 minutes, 40 seconds. So it was the second longest, with Hogan and Rock being the third longest. But yeah, it just missed that energy, and it missed that sort of solid story. Had too many storylines attached to it. And I think that hurt the match a little bit. But they put on as great as a match as they could, considering the circumstances, considering Rock and Hogan stole the show. So, but still, great match. Like I said, I can't sit here and tell you there's a bad match on this card. Even the hardcore match led to some great funny stuff throughout the night. The tag team match, while I think a bit disjointed, still was enjoyable. So, not a bad match tonight. So, let's start as we do our final thing. Top three moments. Number three would be all of the hardcore title vignettes. Because they were from Alisto driving the cart and trying to run over Spike Dudley to Hurricane in the Godfather's hose dressing room, to Molly Holly hitting him over the head with a frying pan, to Chris, to just everything that evolved throughout the night. That was so much fun. I love those moments. Number two, Arn Anderson coming back to give Undertaker a spine buster. I popped for that. Like, I popped the holy hell for that moment. It's been 16 years. I still pop for it. But last but not least, moment of the night, Hulk Hogan hulking up, and that pop. Just, oh my God, I can watch that moment over and over and over and over and over again. And then top three matches. I would say, and this has actually kind of changed while doing this review. I initially had Triple H and Jericho at number three, but I've sort of talked myself out of it. So I've switched it with my number four. So at number three, Undertaker versus Flair. Very solid match. Had great storyline, great psychology throughout it. Number two, RVD versus William Regal for the Intercontinental title, opening the show. Very good match. And of course, number one, Rock versus Hollywood Hogan. Great psychology, great storytelling. Such electric energy throughout the match. I think if they knew this ahead of time, would have been the main event. So, match of the night, my top pick, The Rock versus Hollywood Hogan. Hollywood Hulk Hogan. So, final thoughts. This is a really great WrestleMania card. Like I said, not a bad match. At worst, the matches are solid. And they go from that to... There's really only one truly great match. But, like I said, most of the matches are solid. There are a couple that are really good. You know, Angle versus Kane, Taker versus Flair, Austin versus Hall, though if it had that the edges I talked before would be much better. Same for Triple H versus Jericho. Again, just missing those edge parts. That little bit of edge, a little bit of energy, a little bit of electricity. That I guess seemed to get sucked all into The Rock versus Hollywood Hulk Hogan. A truly electric match. A truly an icon versus icon match. It's a WrestleMania moment. There's a reason it's considered one of the greatest WrestleMania matches of all time. It truly deserves all its recognition. Some good musical acts. The WrestleMania crowd wasn't as good as WrestleMania 17, but again, just at the fast-paced matches went, it's so understandable. But still, it's just a solid WrestleMania. It feels like a showcase of Immortals and just like the tremendous event it was. I give WrestleMania 18 a 4.5 out of 5. Just a really, really good show. Not a bad match on the card. Like I said, at worst, matches are solid, but there's many good matches, and truly one historic match that is a WrestleMania legend in its own right. So, yeah, I very much, this is, and more importantly, when you think about sort of historically, really the end of the Attitude Era, because this is 2002, and the next one would be 2003, which really what, like, in my mind, WrestleMania 2003, which is WrestleMania 19, there was a lot of new guys. It does, you know, again, I've never watched 19 all the way through, but again, I never felt like it was truly Attitude Era. It was really felt more like it was the start of what would be known as the Ruthless Aggression Era, which was 2003, 2004, 5, 6, and even 7. Going into 8, 2008's where I sort of, I think the PG era starts to begin. But, yeah. The Ruthless Aggression Era was a great era in itself, completely different from the Attitude Era. So this is sort of the great swan song to what the Attitude Era was, not just in WWE, but I also think with WCW, with a lot of great WCW wrestlers here, Diamond Dallas Page, Booker T, wrestlers from ECW like RVD and Spike Dudley, getting ways to showcase. And wrestlers like Jazz came from ECW as well. So, yeah, really good show. Can't highly suggest watching it. It's a great swan song, I think, for the Attitude Era. So 4.5 out of 5. And that is it for this episode of CMG's Wrestling Reviews. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you enjoy this episode as you get your hopefully you've listened to it for your preparations for WrestleMania Sunday. I promise next episode we're going to have so much to talk about. We're going to talk about NXT TakeOver New Orleans. We're going to talk about WrestleMania 34. We're going to talk about the weekend. Because like this may go down in history as one of the greatest wrestling weekends of all time. Just absolutely amazing. That's all going to be next episode. And I may have a special guest if I can get a MP3 Skype recorder to work. So we'll all see with that. So remember, if you have any emails or comments, you can leave an email at AbsolutionNetwork132@gmail.com. That's AbsolutionNetwork132@gmail.com. Make sure you check out me and Shin Tiger Curl at the website at www.an.132productions.com, where you can listen to this lovely show. And of course, make sure you find us on Facebook by searching for The Absolution Network. Like us, follow us, leave us comments there as well. And that is it for this episode of CMG's Wrestling Reviews. I hope you enjoyed it. And so, until next time, I want you to remember that I'm the most glorious Jew that ever lived in your wrestling messiah, because I'm CM Jew. Recognize? You're all that I have and you're all that I need. Each and every day I pray to get to know you. Please wanna be close to you. Yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around, all around, I believe it, I'm too negative, but I believe, yes, I believe, I said that I believe. I stand among two feet, one be brought down on one knee. I fight with all of my might and get these demons to flee. All gems raised by a blaze, burn bright.
bright and I believe Hashem's rays. My apple is burn bright and I believe out of darkness comes light, twilight unto the heights. Crown lights burning up out of the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I pray with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. I give myself to you from the essence of my being and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will be born in a ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want.